And welcome to The Smoke Break. I'm your host, your pal Zane, here with Zoe Schwartz.
Hello.
Taylor Barrett.
Happy corporate holidays.
And Hannah Schramm.
Hello.
Hannah Schramm is a...
Love Portland artist.
You goddamn right. And comedian.
That was beautiful.
We're going to do that from now on. But before we talk to her a little bit, I just want to do a real quick disclaimer, which is to say that this show is for entertainment purposes only. We work in the field of mental health, but do not claim to be professionals clearly in this space. Our intention is to have conversations about lived experience. As a result, we may not always read correctly in anything our guests say. And we intend to hold space conversations, yada, yada, yada. Yeah, holy shit. Thank you so much for coming.
That wasn't legally binding.
Whoa. Talk to our lawyers about it. Hannah, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. Great job on the intro. I feel very well versed in what the pod is about.
You know the rules now. You know the rules.
That summed it up for sure.
Instead of the disclaimer, we should just call that the rules.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know who gave me rules when I was younger?
Fucking
my family.
Insane.
My family gave me so many rules, and there were some weird dynamics, and that's why we're talking about you guys. Got it. Family dynamics. Very poor.
So good.
Nobody liked that transition.
I feel like the first.
So smooth.
I
blanked out. I honestly didn't listen.
The minute and a half has been us just like trying to walk on like a floor of marbles. Yeah, family dynamics.
That's most of my days. Yeah, that's cool. This energy is feeling comfortable.
You know what else is like walking on a floor of marbles? Family dynamics.
You got that right. Yeah. What's your experience with family dynamics?
Well, it's not walking on a floor of marbles, more like a floor of eggshells.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, no,
it's
way less fun because they break. But yeah, so. With family dynamics, I mean, the way that I grew up, my grandmother raised me and my sister.
Okay.
My grandfather was present as well, and my mom was around, and she had joint custody of me and my sister. Okay. She was sick with addiction, which is why she lost custody of me and my sister. And, you know, throughout that situation, throughout our life, starting around when I was about 3 years old, my mom was more like my aunt as opposed to my direct parental figure.
Okay,
you know, I looked to my grandparents as opposed to her.
Mm-hmm.
She was still an authority figure, but it was different. And so then later on in life, my great-grandmother needed care. So we were caregivers to her. My grandmother and I were caregivers to my great-grandmother. And again, the same thing happened with my grandfather. He got cancer and unfortunately passed. Yeah. But we were caregivers for him as well. My sister also helped with that a lot. But it's always been someone to take care of. And now my grandmother is no longer with us. And now it's just me and my mom. Mm. And I very much can understand where she's coming from.
Yeah.
Why she has the behaviors that she has and does the things that she does and the limitations that she has.
Sure.
But it doesn't change the fact that it frustrates me because I feel like, you know, I hope that had I been played the same hand of cards, would I have played them differently? I like to think so, but who knows? You know, this is how she was able to manage through her life. And, you know, I feel like I'm able to see all the sides of this dynamic so clearly, and it makes me frustrated because I want to be more upset. But I'm like, I understand where she's coming from. So
yeah, well, and I feel like that's important. Is you know, part of it, I think, is important to understand, and I think that part of it is to be upset. You know, because it's just like you can be upset with the way that things played out, and also understand why they played out that way. I don't think it's easier, but.
Yeah. I was just going to say, like, experiencing, like, frustration and empathy in tandem is a very, like, confusing, like, bow to unwind. And I was also curious because, I was not entirely, but a large chunk of my life was being raised by grandparents. I was fucking tossed around like a pimple. It was ridiculous. But I was curious if you felt like I don't know if age gap is the right word, but I feel like I got a lot of weird, like, old traditional style stuff from my grandparents that I was like, normal kids aren't like none of my kids in my classes were like doing the same shit that I was doing because I was being raised by my grandparents. And
Taylor
it was
told me to
school.
Skedaddle one time.
Basically.
Is that not, you've never been told to skedaddle
before? Oh, I have, but by my white grandparents.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
And like, if I had friends over, my grandparents would be like, let's play Scattergories. And I was like, I love Scattergories. This is sick. My friends were like, what are we doing? This is so fucking weird.
You're like, do you want a hard boiled egg? They're like, ew.
Yeah.
Can we have Oreos?
We have some oatmeal for breakfast in the morning. Everybody can have one cookie.
Girl, you guys want a prune? They're like, well, how old are you?
It was very strange. But I was curious if you also experienced anything like that where you're like, this is some grandma shit. I don't know if it's landing well.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I definitely noticed that the differences in the in like my vocabulary and the things that I will do and the things that I think about are a lot different than somebody who was raised by somebody that was in a younger generation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I keep dried bulk goods around.
Fuck yeah.
Oh, there you go.
If that's I run
mark.
Out, I want to go to the basement and get more. I don't want to go to the store.
Oh my God. The basement dry goods.
Was it ever like an entertainment gap? Like I would bring up like Indiana Jones to my friends and they were like, what are you fucking talking about? What is Indiana Jones?
Like
The Sound of Music, guys.
No, for yes, The Sound of Music.
Yeah, all kinds of musicals, a lot of everything on like TCM.
This is really
we would watch TCM all the time and it'd be like, you guys are watching like Darkwing Duck and I'm just like,
no, this is cathartic.
Where's Asta at? Yeah. Like,
this is
Rin Tin Tin coming
Murder,
out.
She Wrote too.
Yeah, well, my great grandma watched Murder, She Wrote. My
grandma, whenever I would go into her, like, because she lived in like an assisted living home and it just had this like smell, but like it was a weird smell because she had plastic on everything. Mm-hmm. Because I had the plastic furniture grandma, great grandma.
So it smelled extra old
instead of a couch.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
It smelled extra old because it smelled like an assisted living home plus plastic on everything. Yeah. That's like
exactly.
That's doubling down.
Yeah.
You gotta pick one.
They sealed the old in there.
Jesus Christ.
Vacuum sealed.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I think family dynamics are interesting. My mom was always struggling with depression and stuff like that. So a lot of times it was not necessarily up to me, but it felt like it was up to me to like come home and cheer her up and like, you know, almost become a caregiver to her or like an emotional support where it's like, that's not really my job right now. Mm-hmm. So like, I think like with family dynamics, it's always weird because it's like, because they either gave birth to you or have this weird hierarchy, it's like you expect to have the safety and support from these people. And then when you don't get that, you kind of have to start looking for other places, you know, and even within yourself.
Well, and I feel like that almost happens unconsciously too, where you're not like, never in my head was like, I feel disconnected and unsafe, so I need to seek it somewhere else. I just kind of ended up doing that, and I was like, I'm in some weird shit.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like you don't notice it happening very much.
I know that for me in my dynamic, because I've taken a long, hard look at these things.
Sure.
I feel like I was always the kid that wanted to be helpful and I wanted to do things and I was capable of it.
Mm-hmm.
So they just allowed me to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, well, how much more can she handle? Mm-hmm. How much more can she handle?
The trap of maturity.
Have more. Yeah. Do more. Do these things for us. And then it just gets piled and piled and piled. And it helps when you like the person that you're caregiving for,
but
you don't always like them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, I think like, you know, there's a certain amount of like you don't expect appreciation, but it's nice and it helps you not build resentment, you know.
Hey, well, I mean, yeah, just being able to have like a nice conversation or spend like genuine time with the other person.
Absolutely.
You know, like that sometimes is enough to be like, you know, my love meter is refilled.
Yes.
You know, it does deteriorate and it needs to get refilled somehow.
Well, and something I was explaining to somebody else is like almost like the way I described it is similar to the love meter, but I call it like a patience meter.
There you go.
Where it's like there's basically a bank where you make deposits into the patience meter. And as long as you're making deposits in deposits, then, you know, you can make withdrawals. But if it's only withdrawals, then like, I don't have any patience because you fucking took it all. I don't know which way this line bar graph goes, but it's up or down.
It's a balance for sure.
Yeah. Is it a balance?
I thought it was interesting.
It's supposed to be.
Oh.
No, it's supposed to be balance.
Oh, yeah.
Did you?
Yeah. Well, speaking of balance, I was going to say, I thought it was interesting where you said that kind of that like trying to have a space to heal and be angry for the things that like didn't support you or didn't meet you where you needed when you were a kid. But then also like having context to understand why people struggle or why they don't show up for us. And I think that's like a really delicate balance because you do need to feel validated in like the impact on you. But I think also in order to like feel healed, you also need to find some place to like be, you know, have compassion for like their struggles and understand that like they probably did the best they could, even if their best wasn't what you needed. You know what I mean? So it's like, yes, like you deserve more, but also like it feels usually at some point it feels good to understand them in a way that feels more like seeing them as someone who's, you know, like a product of their environment or, you know, or whatever.
Yeah. It's always interesting to ask, like, especially if we're discussing like family dynamics, like what was this person's family, like what was my grandma's family dynamic like to mold her into a way that when she could have an effect on her own family dynamic that she had the effect that she did, you know, mm-hmm. like what happened to her that made her have this output. And it's always weird digging. It's always weird experiencing so much curiosity, because then you, like, once you get answers, you can start experiencing empathy, and that usually weirdly affects how you experience frustration, but mm-hmm. like it should still validate your frustration. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Answers don't negate how you were affected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's important to care about yourself enough to acknowledge that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. No. And I feel like I've been dealing with this with my dad a little bit, like, 'cause he's getting old and needing more help and stuff. And mm-hmm. just like sometimes the stuff that he does is like so triggering. And like, there's this point of like, I used to argue with him all the time, but now I'm like, I don't want to argue with him anymore. And like, luckily he's gotten softer a little bit too. So like, we've been able to get along better. But yeah, it's really challenging to like be in that place of like, they need you to care for them. But then you're also like, you're doing this thing that like made me have really challenging relationships as an adult. Or like, you know, like, like when you said that thing just now about whatever, like it super triggered me. And I'm like, oh, that's why I feel this way about myself, because you said that all the time when I was a kid or whatever, you know? So it's really interesting to find that balance, and it's hard, but I think it's, yeah, I mean, it sounds like you've had a lot of experiences with caring for people, so.
Yeah,
and finding balances.
Yeah, and finding balances. Yeah, finding that balance is always the hardest part. For me, and it's not for everybody, but I, especially after my grandfather died, that was when it really was really hard. But I decided to start doing this thing called Fancy Friday. Okay. I love alliteration for one, and I was a nanny at the time, so I could just go to work in my pajamas every day, which I did for a while. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, well, I have to live my life, right? I have stuff to do. I have people to take care of. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to just do something extra for myself on Fridays. So I would dress up nice or do my makeup or just wear something that I didn't normally wear, like a pair of socks that have special things on them or whatever.
That's such a good idea.
Yeah. So
write that down.
Yeah. Fancy Friday. Hashtag Fancy Friday.
Like the opposite of casual Friday. It's like, no, it's Friday. Let's lock in.
Yeah. And then bonus, if you dress up already in the daytime and you have to go out later, you're already ready.
Nailed it.
Already ready. It's about that efficiency.
Yeah, that's a real like dress for the job you want sort of mindset.
Yeah.
Dress for the party you want.
Yeah, dress for the night you want to have.
Yeah.
I want to go to work and then I want to go out.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I think that like when it comes to, you know, creating like a healthy relationship with with a family member, it is definitely hard to almost like backtrack from where it's like, I've been taking care of you, you know, or you've been taking care of me. Now I'm taking care of you, or I've always been taking care of you. And now I'm doing it again. I think that that's extra complicated. And it's not fair to, I feel like the people who are experiencing that like switch, they shouldn't have to, you know, like if you're a child having to be a parent to your parent.
Yeah.
It feels so unfair.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, well, in the moment, I didn't really realize it until relatively recently, you know, that I had such an adult role as a child. Mm-hmm. But
it's so confusing, too. It's like, I don't have all the fucking answers.
Yeah, you know, and then it's like, oh, you treat me like an adult, and yet I can't do adult things? This sucks.
Yeah. Your maturity only goes as far as, like, the expectations of what you can do, not, like, what you can expect to be able to do.
Yeah, and it's always tough, too, when, like someone is sick and so you help them and then they are getting better, but you're still doing those things and they haven't reached that point yet where they think that they can do those things again.
Oh, yeah.
And so finding that balance where you can talk to them about like, hey, I noticed that you can pick this thing up. Does that mean you can do these things again?
Yeah.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
You know, wow, finding like that compromise of like, what is super hard for you? I will do those things. Mm-hmm. What is easy? What can you do?
Yes.
You will do those things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like
yeah.
that concept should be applied in a lot more situations than medically. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like the noticing somebody's progression and like, I don't know, like talking about it, being like, I noticed you're doing this thing. Do you want to attempt to try something else that you struggled with? Like, I feel like that conversation could be had in so many different effective ways in like relationships, friendships, romantic relationships, parents, school. You know what I mean? Just like, I love the way that you like presented that idea of acknowledging somebody's progression and helping them challenge themselves a little bit. Like, I think that's a really effective idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not self-serving at all. Meaning I don't want to do that thing that I was totally doing.
But it's framing it in the way of like, I noticed you're getting real good at this. You do it again.
Well, it's probably an important part of caretaking. It's like,
and more.
Like noticing when you're, maybe like don't need to be doing the thing anymore for them and for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Real cool. We're going to take a real quick break. We're going to take a real quick break. We'll be right back with the smoke break in just a second. And welcome back to the smoke break. I'm your host, your old pal Zane, here with Zoe Schwartz.
Hi.
Taylor Barrett.
I'm anxious.
And Anna Schramm.
Hi.
On this part, we actually wanted to reference Taylor's anxiety.
Nice to meet you, anxious. I'm avoidant.
Oh, nice to meet you, avoidant. I'm disorganized.
No, I'm not. I mean,
that's right. We're talking about attachment styles. I don't know. What's kind of your idea about attachment styles? I kind of feel like it's Zodiac stuff where it's just like, this is roughly what somebody's like.
I'm an attached Libra.
I think it is based in like some science, but I think it's a theory, just like a lot of other things. But it kind of helps people understand like why they are the way they are in relationships. Mm-hmm. So like close relationships, you know, but the main ones are secure, anxious, avoidant, and disorganized. And like secure makes, you know, it's just like having.
It's like the idealized relationship.
Yeah, it's the idealized one. It's like you feel safe in relationships. You're not worried about them leaving you all the
Fuck
time.
Fuck you.
You don't do.
Pure people. Yeah, sorry, yeah. My bad.
So like you're able to be interdependent.
Yeah, what's that like?
Yeah.
You have parents who cared about you?
Yeah, I mean. Yeah.
Those are real?
And then
that's like big parents,
total myth.
I've only ever seen blurry pictures of those.
Oh yeah, and then anxious is like being worried that often being fearful that someone's going to leave you and like behaving in a way that represents that kind of experience in life.
Please no stay.
Avoidant is like just not really wanting to be close to people because it's scary, and you could imagine why that might be. Like
nope,
you know.
No idea.
And then disorganized is often seen as like a combination of anxious and avoidant. So
just very inconsistent.
You will avoid people, or you will be very attached, or you'll go back and forth between being pushing people away and pulling them in and feeling, and it's often feels really terrible to experience that. But this is not a set in stone thing. And I believe that people can like shift. I think it depends on the relationship, depends on the growth you've done.
Yeah.
And just because you have good parents, you could still have anxious attachment style.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of factors at play. And I think an important way to look at this, kind of like what you said, is like these aren't like definitive categories that it's like you put on the fucking Harry Potter sorting hat and you get picked for one of these.
There's
like gray areas
anxious.
In between.
Yeah.
Damn it. I knew it. Please don't say anxious. Please don't say anxious. Avoidant. Oh, fuck. That's worse. Fucking there's gray areas. You're gonna like shift between them, and it's like I think these are used to like describe behaviors. Like if somebody is doing something in an anxious attachment way consistently, then you can be like, you're exhibiting an anxious attachment style, but that doesn't mean that they are anxious attachment style every single fucking time.
Yes.
And I think it's important to like evaluate where you are with a lot of relationships and like figure out what you're kind of experiencing and the
context of like why you might be feeling that way, right? Because if you're in like an emotionally abusive relationship, I think it would make sense to feel anxious.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You know, so
where do we feel like we mostly live?
I knew we were gonna go around the table.
Yep, anxious for sure.
But are you ready to answer?
Oh, I just did.
Oh,
no, she's just anxious about the answer. Okay.
I'm so sorry. So you're anxious.
I'm walking on marbles. We are walking on marbles.
I am anxious and marbles. I'm anxious. So I get why that was confusing.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm anxious. Okay. Me too.
Well, yeah, I know, Zoe.
And your style.
This just in.
Yeah, I would say avoidant or maybe disorganized, where it's like, I want love, but I'm afraid of it. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't say like I pull people in and then push them away. I would just say that like the idea of loving and being loved sounds sweet. The fear of not makes me avoidant.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the idea of like pushing and pulling is like on the extreme end.
Yeah, that
like,
is
like,
definitely on extreme.
Like there are smaller behaviors that could like slowly nudge someone
totally.
Away or slowly pull.
Yeah. Oh, well, in that case, absolutely disorganized. I thought these were big pushes, big pulls.
Yeah. These aren't shoves off of cliffs.
Yeah.
No, that is.
And they might turn into that.
That is a more extreme version. But yeah, you're right. There's variation for sure.
I'm definitely anxious. I've definitely desperately tried to maintain things that are actively seeking to destroy me. And it's complicated.
Wild feeling.
It's complicated. Yeah.
I think I'm definitely in the avoidant or the disorganized.
Okay.
I think mostly avoidant because I'm very independent.
Mm-hmm.
I will do it myself.
Nope, don't want to attach to that. That's a lot of feelings.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Do not come over here. I got it.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, I think that each of these have, I would say, like, benefits. I don't know. Uh-huh. Like, I would say, like, being so attached to people that they have to be there, I think is, you know, it can be, like, toxic. I think that avoiding people altogether can be toxic.
Uh-huh.
And I think pulling and pushing people, that's, I'm sorry, everyone.
But you know, something I thought about, though, is that, like, it's all a strategy to, like, get your needs met. So, like, if you think about it like that, then you can think more about, like, the context in which that behavior develops, right?
Yeah, like, these are, like, survival skills.
Yeah, so if somebody's avoidant, maybe they were abused, and so they stayed away to minimize the achievement. chance of them getting harmed.
Yep. Make your world smaller.
Right. So I think that's a cool way to think about it. Kind of helps you feel a little more like.
I think it's interesting too that like one action can affect two people completely. I mean, then this is like kind of like common knowledge, obviously, but like one action can affect two people so uniquely, and it can show up in ways like this, mm-hmm. where like abuse could show up as an avoidant attachment style, because you're like, I never want to experience that again. I'm not letting anybody close. Or it could show up as an anxious attachment style, where you need someone to constantly prove to you that they care enough about you and that they're mm-hmm. not going to hurt you, and so on and so on and so on.
Or like, both. Yeah.
Yeah. Or it could turn into this disorganized constant, like, yeah. I think I don't trust you right now. Wait, I need you to reassure me. And like this, yeah, mm-hmm. the human brain is a piece of hamburger with fucking electricity in it. You know what I mean? Like, it's complicated.
I've never heard anybody describe it that way. I always think it's really funny when people call ground meat hamburger. I'm like, you can make other stuff with it. Like, it's not just hamburger.
Wow, I've never thought of
that. You pull some hamburger out of the freezer. It's like, I can make tacos with it. Like,
you're like not thinking helper. Big enough. You're real small.
Sorry.
Real circular.
Hannah, what about you? I don't know. What are your thoughts on like detachment styles?
Yeah. So I enjoy the idea of learning these new little things about yourself, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think that they're for other people to know. I think they're for you to know.
Yeah.
Because
like love languages.
It's kind of, but that's a little.
Not the best example. Never mind.
Anyway, we're talking about love bad languages. Another. It's not the Valentine's episode. So with the different attachment styles, I think that knowing like. What you gravitate to, mm-hmm. and recognizing your own behavior in relationships that you truly cherish and you want to hold on to them.
Yeah.
And you do what you can to maintain those relationships.
Yeah.
And knowing about yourself is, I mean, one of the biggest factors in a healthy relationship is to understand what you need and how to articulate that to another.
Well, and what you're bringing to them, you know, it's just like we're all bringing like just these broken parts of ourselves to like these present moments. And like we almost have to like hand people this package and be like, this is me now. And there's a bunch of stuff that's the reason for that. But like, I need you to hold me now very gently because there was a lot of hell before this.
Nobody put a Fragile sticker on the box.
No, the
shippers were rough.
Yeah.
I think it's important to mention that you can like heal, and I think you'll always have like maybe like a gut reaction that might feel similar to like what you originally experienced, but I think people can absolutely grow and change and like learn how to relate to people differently. And like I was gonna say, like, I feel like I am an anxious person in relationships, but now I've been in like relationships where the person didn't like wasn't treating me well, and obviously you feel way more anxious because you're getting treated poorly and you can't trust the person or whatever. And like now I'm in a really like secure relationship and I feel so much less anxious. But at the beginning of the relationship, before I knew him and I trusted him very well, I would have moments. I wouldn't like put it on him because I like have grown, but sometimes I would. But most of the time I would be able to work through it on my own. You know what I mean? But I remember feeling really anxious like a lot. Like I was like, cool, being in a relationship is just stressful when you have an anxious attachment style kind of. But now
I like you and this sucks.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I felt at the beginning. I was like, cool, we're falling in love again.
Right. Yeah. And because you knew that about yourself, you were able to potentially even like talk yourself down, like, oh, he's doing that. He's not because I think these things. It's because I'm telling myself stories.
And that's
I always try to remind myself of that.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I'm telling me stories right now and I need to stop.
Yeah.
And that can help you. This could help you understand what stories you tell yourself.
Right.
Recognizing
those stories.
Or even like how loud that voice is that's yelling all these experiences at you to make you afraid. You know, like I definitely have those moments of stuff where like, it's stuff that I've had to like work through, and like I still hear them like screaming at me like, no, this is like, you're not safe, the fucking freak out. And it's like they've gotten quieter.
Yeah,
I still hear them and I still have to be like but like they're still there. It just took me working through it and also continuing to do so. It's not like a checkbox where you're like, I'm done working like working on that forever. It's a thing that you kind of have to acknowledge about yourself, where you're like, this is stuff I'm gonna deal with, and learning how to, like, it's a muscle. You get way better at handling it.
You learn to relate to it differently, like you learn to question it instead of just accepting those voices or those at face value, and they're just like, this sucks, you're gonna get left, and you're like, this is true. Instead you go, okay, maybe this is like an old story that I'm telling myself.
And like the phrase that I said to myself one time, and I just sat there with it for a little while, was like, I can't kill this part of me. And I was like, I can't. I cannot kill this part of me. It's always going to be a little afraid and anxious. I'm going to have to like work with it.
Yeah.
You know, and acknowledge that it's a part of me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like Piglet, you know?
Jesus.
Yeah. somebody that
I don't get it, but
you should watch Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, right. Get educated. Jeez. I worked with somebody one time who made mention of that part of you that like is so ingrained. Mm-hmm. And the way that he made me see it was like, it's a track, right? It's a road that you've mm-hmm. run in mm-hmm. and you're trying to make this new road. But that road that you made before, it's been run in for years. Yeah. Uh-huh. And now you're trying to get into this new one, but it's really easy to get back into that old track. So just mm-hmm. knowing that these lanes exist and that you've made them and that you're trying to make a better one. Yeah. You know, that can potentially, at least it helped me to recognize my old habits and trying to get back into the better habits that I was trying to make.
Yeah. And like an unbeaten path is like confusing and scary. You know, it's just like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing here. This doesn't make any sense. And then like the more you walk it, the more the brush clears and you're just like, this makes more sense. I'm glad I walked this direction.
You have to like bushwhack a new trail.
Yeah. But you got to bring a machete and start going to business.
Yeah. It's so easy to fall back into that old trail though. It's
well,
too
and
worn
I mean,
in.
I think it's because it's comfortable, you know, mm-hmm. it's like at least there's a
predictable.
It's predictable. It's like, I've dealt with this before. I know how people in this situation react to this. So that way, so it's like, I think that, you know, oftentimes the, you know, a lot of folks will say is that you kind of end up with like people that kind of represented the, you know, almost like the flaws or the things that you received when you were growing up.
Yeah, it's so weird.
But I mean, it makes sense where it's just like, if you're used to being neglected, then you think when you're in a relationship where somebody's not paying attention to you, but they say they love you, you're like, well, that must be true because that's what it is.
Yeah.
I think that goes into like a lot of different things too. Like even just like the Freudian fucking you date somebody that and that reminds you of your mom. It's like,
which is real weird because I have two moms, don't know what to do with it. Yeah. Freud.
Getting a lot of influence here.
Than the rest of us.
Yeah. Wow, this got so weird.
Silver lining.
I guess it's okay.
Also, your mom's like really supportive. So like I can totally see you being with somebody that's really supportive. And it would be weird if somebody was like, you're with somebody that's supportive, you're dating someone that's like your mom. It's like, no, you're dating somebody that's supportive. That's so fucking weird. Dude, I don't get it. But it's also it's like it's just you seek qualities that like are comforting to you. And if you're traumatized, those comforting qualities could be like familiar pain. And that's fucking destructive. And you gotta have a lot of conversations with yourself about it.
Yep. That's a tough one.
Damn, that familiar pain shit fucking hit all.
I know. I know.
I got real quiet.
That's like a song lyric. Familiar pain. Okay, all right.
I'm gonna go.
Let me go smoke six cigarettes,
listen to Three Doors Down, and we are going to be right back. It's a great band with the Smoke Break.
What?
In just a minute. And welcome back to the Smoke Break. I'm your host, your old pal Zane, here with Zoe Schwartz.
Hi.
Taylor Barrett.
Zane was thinking of Creed.
Creed. It was Creed. And Hannah Schramm.
Hello.
6 feet from the edge, and we're thinking about talking about Pride.
What the fuck's sake?
Pride is important, and it's not the one you're thinking of. I mean the kind that you have when you do something good.
What's that?
I don't know. I read about it somewhere.
Not the kind I would
think
of. I
thought you brought me on here to talk about stuff I knew about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that we can kind of put our heads together and figure out what being proud of yourself is.
Okay, I believe in us.
Okay.
Well, this is one of those unfamiliar lanes you were talking about earlier.
Indeed, yeah.
All right, let's try it. What's something you've been proud of recently?
Okay. So I was actually really proud after my stand-up showcase.
Okay.
Yeah, I was proud about that.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
What made you especially proud about it?
How everyone said I was amazing. Mm. Yeah, that positive reinforcement from strangers really does it.
Yes.
As soon as someone who loves me says I'm good, though, I don't believe them because they are biased.
Well, yeah,
you're obligated to say that. Like, why? You're probably lying.
Exactly. A stranger has no reason to tell me lies. Mm-hmm. There's no reason.
That's true. That is true.
Maybe that's
true.
Why we do this thing.
Absolutely. No, I surround myself with people I love, lie to myself constantly. Yeah. It's awful. No, but I mean, I think that being able to see yourself through other people's eyes is something that allows you to like more fully, I don't know, just accept yourself and like the things that you're able to do.
Indeed. Yeah, I felt that way also because I had some art in a gallery recently, which I was also very proud of. So I guess I do know what this feeling is.
Yeah.
But this is just recently within the last 2 months up until now.
Never.
It's not been. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. And being able to hear what others have to say about my art was really, it's really, really amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, of course, there's always people out there who might not like what you do.
Sure.
But the people who do like it will let you know. And
that's very true.
I enjoyed especially learning about what they liked about my art. Like, I liked different things about it.
Sure.
But they liked other things. And I'm like, I didn't. think anybody would like that.
Yeah, or even notice it.
Okay.
What about you, Taylor? What's something you've been proud of recently?
Okay, well, I want to approach this from like two different categories. So like one way that like I felt proud of myself recently was when we were doing some like of the video editing stuff, and I didn't even notice that I did that, but like you commented on it where like something went wrong with the software we were using, and I was like, okay, fuck it, I'm just gonna like start all over with this other software. Like that's not something that I've done a whole lot. Usually that's a time where I'm like, I'm gonna sit on this for an hour, and that hour becomes a year. Mm-hmm. But I just kind of fucking did it, and then I was really stoked with the result, and now we're just kind of like going through more songs to like find moments and songs that would be cool for highlights, or find moments and songs that would be cool for a scene, or like whatever. And yeah. So like just that like that feeling of like doing the thing and the snowball kind of like rolling off the hill by itself after doing it felt really, really cool.
That's awesome.
And just another way that I'm always feeling a sense of like pride or just proudness in general is like, I mean, my daughter is super fucking cool. She's so goddamn smart and just amazing to be around. And so there's this weird sense of like, when I see her do something, I'm really proud of her, but there's mm-hmm. also this almost like selfish, like pride within like knowing that I'm like an extension of the stuff that she's doing. I'm like helping her. I'm facilitating an environment that like allows her to do the things at the rate that she's doing them. And it's so, sure. It's hard to feel like it's not biased sometimes, but even I don't know. I'm just like, holy shit, how'd you figure that out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She saw something the other day. She's like got a new like kitchen set or whatever. And part of it was for coffee, and one of it said milk on it, and she was like, oh, this is where the milk goes. And I was like, did you read that? Like, what, yeah. Are you reading now?
Four or three?
Yeah, she's four. Just turned four.
Yeah.
And she's kind of shifted into like doing math to doing spelling stuff now. And she's mm-hmm. like, she'll still occasionally just like ask what addition is.
What's 73 plus 42?
Yeah.
And then just like tell you the number. And it's like, I didn't know. Like, wow. I can't even tell you if you're right.
It's so trippy. But yeah, like those moments of like being proud of her, it gives me kind of like a secondary feeling of stoked proudness, I guess.
Yeah, you know? absolutely. Well, and I like that you said like both of those things, because I was extremely proud of you that one day when you were working on that clip. And it's just like, it's so easy to hit a road bump and be like, well, fuck it, that's a wall. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I thought it was really cool that you're just like, this isn't working, but I'm gonna find a way to make it work. And you were working like on that muscle of like finishing things.
Yeah,
so
that is one that I struggle with, is like seeing something to completion. It's really easy to just like hit a moment where I have to like wait for something to install or like figure something else out, and it's really feeding. But just being like, I know what I can do, I'm just gonna go fucking do it, and just powering through.
Do the parts you can.
I was really stoked with the result. It looked really fucking cool.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Zoe, what about you? What have you been proud of lately?
I don't know. I'm having a hard time thinking of something, but I was proud of myself for like a show I did a couple weeks ago, or maybe a month ago. I had a really good set at Helium, and I felt really good about it. So was a moment of pride, because I was nervous, and I've had like some, you know, like good moments on that stage and some bad moments.
And
one of the last ones was kind of a bad one. So in my mind, at least, so I think like the things that make me feel the most brave are things that I'm the most scared of, which I think is probably pretty like straightforward, but obvious. But I did a really good job all day of like talking to myself kindly and telling myself I was excited, not nervous. And tried to really use the power of the way I talk to myself to like see if I can.
Yeah.
And I did. I like stayed calmer than I thought I would and did good. So.
Well, and I like that you said that too about the like talking to yourself all day in a good mood, like in a like this is going to go well. Cause I've definitely done that for like part of my day, you know, like the first part where I'm like, today's going to be a good day. And then it's not for 3 seconds. I'm like, this is the worst day ever. And it's going to be for forever.
Yeah.
And, but it's, I think especially with like shows, like the days that I have, just the whole day made sure that I reminded myself that I'm excited and not scared. Yeah. And you know, also the thing that you were saying too, is like, it sounds like in both of your cases that it took, you know, like overcoming something,
mm-hmm.
right, to be proud of it.
Because I think something like, that we normally don't do.
Yeah, exactly. Like if you're usually like talking down to yourself and you're usually giving up at the first road bump, and like both of you made sure that you beat that, that's mm-hmm. something you can be proud of.
Yeah.
And I definitely think that part of it was just like, I don't know. I kind of forgot how much I loved editing shit. I forgot how much I loved making highlight videos and matching stuff to music. And so like being stoked to see the result that I know I can make is part of what was made it like seamless to just like push through the, like, mm-hmm. the issues. And it felt really good just riding that hype of getting to the result and then actually getting there and not letting myself like beat myself up because I didn't get to the end, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Hannah, what about you? Like, what's been your experience with pride? You said that it was more of a recent thing. Like, why do you think, what do you think stopped you before?
Oh, my childhood. I don't know. Just because it's like, it's always been, okay, I did this thing and now I have to do another thing. So I'm going to do that thing now. And so the thing I just did, I don't have time. Yeah. To think about
just constantly moving the goalpost.
Yeah, very good analogy. Yes, that. Yeah,
thank you.
So
I got that from Taylor.
Yeah, well, it's perfect. But yeah, because it's just I never give myself time to acknowledge the things that I've done because there's always something else I need to do because I'm the one that's going to do it.
Or just so like bathe in the success for a second. You know what I mean? Just let yourself feel it.
Yeah. Well, and I have a tendency to do something very similar where it's just like, instead of being happy that I finished something, I'm upset that I didn't finish two things.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's kind of a trap that I get stuck in. So I think definitely like, yeah, just basking in the small parts of it, because I mean, if you're constantly working on something, you're going to be neglecting something. Like that's always going to be the case. And if you're always focusing on the thing that you didn't do, then you never get to celebrate the things that you did. And so
I've brought it up before, but like you describing that kind of reminded me of like the Schindler's List analogy, where like he saved all these fucking people and then he like had a meltdown because he couldn't save one more. And it's like all, but he didn't understand even at that point, because he was so passionate about saving people, that he saved so many people. He changed so many fucking lives to the positive, but just like that tunnel vision on like the next thing. And it's like, that's kind of an extreme example. I get why he'd want to save one more person, but just the idea of like, you did all these fucking things, fucking appreciate it. Like let yourself feel that win.
Yeah.
What about like pride that like is the opposite kind of pride where like it gets in the way?
Like arrogance?
Yeah. Like, because I feel like we use the word for both, right? Like good kind of pride and then also like, oh, like my pride prevented me from being or doing or whatever. So I feel like pride can also be a negative thing, right?
Absolutely.
Because
absolutely.
It's more like arrogance, right? Like,
well, and I think that like there's a certain amount of like pride of like, I believe I'm this kind of person, therefore, you know, these are all the things I align with, yada, yada, yada. And I think that that's extremely important. But I think that like there's times where you cut yourself off from opportunities because you believe I'm this type of person, therefore these are the things I do, these are the things I don't do. Like you cut yourself off from opportunities because of, I don't know, like almost an overinflated belief about yourself of like, you know, I have to maintain this whatever I think people are viewing.
Like being overly attached to a certain aspect of your identity or something like that.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
I feel like, so when you describe that, I was thinking of somebody like being or showcasing pride in like an arrogant way, like in a conversation. But it sounds like you were describing that from like a lifestyle standpoint. And I'm just kind of curious of like an example of that.
So I would say like, for example, my pride. Somebody asked me to do a movie and I was just like, well, what if the script isn't what I want it to be? Well, I'm Zane and I want it to look like this. So my pride won't allow me to do this thing that I'm not sure what it's going to look like.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah. I think that's a good example of just kind of like holding yourself back because of
perfectionism, perhaps.
That too. I think that those can melt into each other very, very effectively seem, I don't know, one of those words. It happens a lot.
Easily.
Quickly. That word.
Right a bit.
I was digging through the thesaurus, land on the wrong page. Yeah. Shit happens. I don't know.
I'm all often, which is the least smart word you could use for that.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Off and on.
But I mean, I like the idea of pride just, it can be a negative thing. What are the times that you feel like pride held you back?
I feel like my pride is very quiet and my self-loathing is very loud.
Mm-hmm.
And so like when the two combat each other, it gets very confusing and exhausting. I don't know if my pride has held me back nearly as many times as like my anxiety has. It's hard to think of times that like my arrogance has been like, no, I'm too good for that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't really know.
I've got one.
Yeah. Okay, shoot.
I don't want help doing anything. I am too proud to accept help from stuff. I will put a ladder precariously over the stairs and figure out how to install drywall before I ask somebody to help me do it.
Yeah, just to hold the ladder, really. Just even that.
I don't like, need nope. it. It's fine.
No. I guess
I know how gravity works.
Does it feel like because you can't, like, do you feel like it's because you feel like you can't trust other people to do it right, so you have to do it? Like, does it come from that?
Or? Probably, like, not being able to trust, or also just always being the one to do it.
Yeah.
You know, just, like, and not having, you know, the bandwidth to ask somebody because nobody in my bandwidth area was available to help. So I was just like, you know, instead of asking somebody else to do it, I'll just do it. Thank you very much. And, you know, and then that also comes around from, like, you know, not basking in your own pride of, like, being proud that you did something. Because it's this always push of, like, what else can you do? You have to do more stuff. You can't, like, we live in the society where you have to produce things, and that's your worth.
Well, and once you prove yourself, you have to continue to produce.
You have to maintain the level that you
You're king of the world? Well, you know.
Keep
are
on.
You still king of the world?
Yeah. You king of the world shit all the time, and if you're not, then.
Yep. You're prince of the world or whatever, however that works.
I think that real world, like the just like day-to-day life application of like pride getting in the way of things, I feel like kind of unlocked that door for me. So I would say my answer is my pride can definitely get in the way of like being emotionally vulnerable sometimes. I feel like I'm decent about being emotionally vulnerable, but if there's a lot of stuff going on, or I feel like me doing that would step on somebody else's toes, or it's not relevant right now, or I'm not dealing with it in a way, you know, there's a laundry list of reasons that I could just want to just bottle it up, but like that I would have to say that's my example of just being like, nope, my shit doesn't matter right now, fucking bury it, you know.
No, that definitely makes sense. I definitely get the like I forgot it. Zoe, tell me when pride has held you back.
Well, I was kind of like initially I was when you said that thing about like I feel like my insecurity has held me back way more times, but I also think then I was thinking like maybe it is kind of, I mean, it's still also kind of like the perfectionism thing, but I feel like my pride prevents me from being comfortable being bad at stuff. You know what I mean? So like,
that's really good. Yeah. That's such a good answer.
Yeah. Like, it's like, I think it's insecurity, but I think it actually is pride because it's this idea that like, if I don't do it perfectly, then I'm a loser and I suck at that thing. Where if I had more space, so it could be seen as like insecurity or perfection, but I think it also comes from a place of pride of like, because I feel insecure, I have to do things well. And if I don't, then it proves that I'm the thing that I'm worried
I am. You have a vision in your head of what something's going to turn out to be. Yeah. And if you take a risk and it doesn't turn out that way, then that is a stab to your pride because it's like, well, I know I'm better, then I can do it better.
Yeah.
Well, that's such an interesting way to describe insecurity and pride coexisting.
But
that's like perfect. I think you hit the nail on the head.
Well.
Like
it just came to me.
The insecurity not wanting you to look dumb and the pride wanting you to look good is like, if I'm not good at this thing, I feel dumb. Yeah. I don't look good. Fuck this thing. The holding those two standards in tandem is...
Yeah, it's weird.
It's delicate.
Yeah. Because I was like, same thing. I'm like, no, I'm just super insecure. And I was like, no, you're afraid to be bad at something, which a lot of other people don't care as much as you do when you go up and have a bad set. Mm-hmm. You're just like, whatever. But I'm like, that means I'm a bad comedian.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I think, you know.
We all individually feel that way about ourselves. I think. At least I do.
Well, and I think like even in the comedy example, just the idea that.
When does pride get in your way, Zane?
There we go. Pride gets in my way. Thank you so much. Pride gets in my way where I'm like right now, like I want to do new jokes, but like I'm used to doing older jokes where people laugh. And so I'm afraid of people not laughing. Yeah. So my pride is like, you need to be perceived as funny. So you need to go over old material. But it's like you already know that material works. Yeah. So there's no benefit to it. So it's just like, am I, you know, is my pride holding me back from getting better? Because I want to be perceived as good.
Okay. Well, I have a suggestion for that because I obviously struggle with it too.
Please.
Is mix them together. I mean, this is not a shocking, you know, the shit sandwich. Like, do two of your, like, start your.
You eat one of those before?
Start your set with one of your good jokes and your set with one of your good jokes that you know will make people laugh and then put the new shit in the middle. So then if it bombs, you've got a little buffer on either end
to remind
you that you are good at this thing.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, speaking of shit sandwiches, this has been The Smoke Break.
Wow.
I've been your host, your old pal Zane, here with Zoe Schwartz.
Shit sandwich Schwartz.
Taylor Barrett.
Holy shit sandwich.
And Hannah Schramm.
I'll take mine to go.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Doggy bag for you.